is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be reviewing this week is Heavy Weather by The Weather Report.
Oh, that's a good one.
I don't know this one.
I'm pretty sure we have this on vinyl somewhere. It's a pretty good one.
Here is a description. It says, Heavy Weather is the landmark 1977 album by jazz fusion supergroup Weather Report and one of the genre's defining records, blending the virtuosity of jazz and the electricity of rock and rhythmic sensibilities of funk and Latin music. The album finds the band at their creative peak, led by keyboardist Joe Zawinul and saxophonist Wayne Shorter, and featuring the explosive fretless bass work of Jaco Pastorius, Heavy Weather introduced a new level of accessibility to jazz fusion without compromising its complexity. The album opens with the now iconic Birdland, a joyous, infectious track that became a crossover hit and a jazz standard. Elsewhere, the band explores cinematic moods, a remark you made, high-octane groove workouts on Teen Town, and the extended sonic landscapes of Harlequin and Havana. Each member's contribution is distinct and dazzling, yet the ensemble playing remains tight and cohesive. The album's production is crisp, lush, and layered, showcasing a band pushing the limits of their instruments and genre. You said you have heard this before.
Not in a little while, but yes, I have heard it.
Yeah. Well, I know the names. I know the names of Jaco Pastorius and Wayne Shorter. But yeah, anyway, this album was released in March of 1977, and the genre is jazz fusion, and it came out on Columbia Records, and it was produced by Joe Zawinul, Jaco Pastorius, and Wayne Shorter. And there are 8 songs on the album, and side one and side two is divided pretty evenly, with 4 and 4. So if you're listening along, which we do encourage you to do, if you want, the album starts with the song Birdland, and side one ends with Harlequin. And if you want to stop there, we take a break halfway through to discuss the album at the halfway point. And we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can get it on your preferred streaming service. And also want to remind you to check out our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and you can get these episodes the day before they go live, and you can get a shout out during these episodes, as well as pick an album for us to review. So there's lots of cool stuff there if you want to check that out. But without further ado, here we go. Here is the first song on the album, Birdland. Here we go. All right, and ending side one with Harlequin. This is really interesting.
It's jazz fusion.
It's jazz fusion, yeah. I think we did a more recent, we did a jazz fusion album not too long ago, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did, and I can't remember what it was.
it is interesting hearing this, and what's standing out to me is Jaco Pastorius's fretless bass and that sound like this was released in 77, and it's a sound that I associate. It's not the sound of the 80s, but is definitely a sound that I associate with the 80s.
Well, I'm pretty sure Jaco Pastorius sort of invented that sound by removing the frets from his Fender Jazz Bass. So that's, at least that's sort of my understanding. I might be wrong.
No, I think you're right. I think he basically invented the fretless bass. And by literally taking the frets off of his bass, and discovering that, oh, it makes this different sound. Everybody kind of copied that sound. Like, how did you get that? Well, I did this to my bass. And then they started selling fretless basses, and
of course,
the whole thing took off. But yeah, it is interesting hearing that sound in from an album from 1977, because at that time he was the only one
really doing it. Yeah.
But you know, the other players on this, I mean, they are fantastic. I mean, I don't feel like this is jazz fusion. I feel like this is more jazz than rock. Like, jazz fusion is a combination of jazz and rock. I feel like this is more jazz than...
It's definitely more on the jazz side, but it's got other elements thrown into it, which makes it fusion. It's just definitely more jazz than a lot of other jazz fusion. A lot of jazz fusion is almost like a progressive rock, actually.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm hearing it. It's progressive rock, but it definitely has more in line with like jazz of the 50s than it does like what was happening in the 70s, if that makes sense. Like that I'm not hearing a lot of rock in here. There's elements sprinkled in, but I feel like a lot of jazz fusion, or the last one that we did was more like maybe more rock. I don't know.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean, and I think you're right. Yeah, this one definitely errs more on the side of jazz. And I mean, they basically wrote a jazz standard for the first track, and it's you know, it's been covered by lots of people. Mostly in jazz circles.
Yeah, I mean that one is pretty fantastic. I mean, I was impressed right away, and it's I'm feeling the way I'm feeling with this. It's not, I'm not so much paying attention to the music itself. It's more like it's putting me in a sort of mood. It's a very relaxing sort of feeling.
It's got sort of like it creates a certain mood for sure. Sometimes you're like in a bustling city, and then other times you're still in that city, but you're looking over it, and it's like nighttime, and there's just like, you know, it's very calming. And
yeah, it's like riding. Our reference point would be Toronto. It would be like riding the subway from Kipling all the way out to Kennedy, and then just watching the people get on and off, and how it gets so busy around like St. George Bay and Yonge, and then it sort of tapers off the further out you go. It's sort of like that kind of thing. You're just kind of there watching the whole thing. You know, from an outside, that's kind of how the feeling that it gets. It's like you're watching it from the outside.
I've done that. I haven't done that in a while, but I did do that. Decided to just ride the subway to whatever stations it'll take me to before I went home. It was just something I decided to do one day. Now there's more stations to visit, and I haven't visited them.
Yeah,
but
and they're putting in a whole new line, but that's a topic
that's another topic.
Yeah.
Talk about transit systems.
Yeah, suddenly this is a transit podcast.
But yeah, it's like being in different... You take a city and you sort of like put yourself in different parts of the city, and you're looking over, or you're in the bustle of it, or it's different time of day or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's not, I'm less, like with a lot of the music that we listen to on here, I'm paying attention to like what the drums are doing and or what the guitars sound like or what the guitar player is doing or how the bass fits in with the drums. But with this, I'm not quite doing that. It is more like going with the feeling of how the music is making me feel rather than getting to the specific things that people are playing. And tying that back to what I was saying before with Jaco's
fretless bass,
with his fretless bass, that is making me, it's sort of reminding me of a certain style of music that I associate with the 80s that I can't quite put my finger on. I can't quite give you a specific song or artist, but it's just that sound that I just know I've heard before in something.
Well, the fretless bass, I know it gets used in folk music sometimes, you know, when it's a little more electric and stuff like that. But yeah, jazz fusion, I think, is where it started, obviously. Yeah, I'm trying to think of something else. Sometimes they would use it in, like, TV show theme like songs or music? Something, or incidental music or something like that. Yeah. Sometimes it would, yeah, you know, make its way onto, you know, TV or not so much movies, but definitely in TV around the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Starting probably in the very late 70s and maybe going right up into the very early 90s, though we were definitely pushing other sounds at that point.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. It is in a lot of folk music. It's in a lot of, I don't know, there's something, it's one of those things that it's a core memory for me.
Gotcha.
But I'm not, I just can't put my finger on it. It's one of those things. It's like, it's like it's on the other side of a brick wall or something with a peephole. It's like, I can kind of see.
There's something over there that's familiar, but you don't know what it is.
I am enjoying this album in a different way than I normally enjoy music, I think is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I'm quite impressed with it.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, like, it was very well received at the time. It wasn't like the song Birdland became a hit, but it wasn't like a cultural phenomenon type of thing. It was a song that did well.
Yeah. It was it was big among like musicians and stuff like that. This is like a musician's band.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like mainstream pop or anything like that. But it was fairly well known at the time for what it was.
Yeah. And critically, like it did well with like among critics. It's in June 1977 review, Dan Oppenheimer said for Rolling Stone that he felt the band had moved away from their earlier music, losing a lot of the space, melodies, and airy feel that set them apart from other jazz rock bands, but gaining a new bassist who had been instrumental in developing their busier talkative style, and that while their music previously went up and only becoming more ethereal as it went, the new bottom makes all the difference in the world. And I'm curious to hear their other stuff.
Yeah, I'm not overly familiar with a lot of the other stuff. I think there was like a few earlier albums, but that Jaco Pastorius wasn't on, which I think is what the thing just said, basically. There are some later albums. I don't know if we have them around here or not. I know we have this one, but we might have one other one, and I don't know what. I can't remember which one it is. But they were definitely an interesting act for the late 70s and into the early 80s.
Yeah, and it seems like they were like a super group of like studio players, mostly. It's sort of like something they did on the side for fun for the most part, which is pretty cool. That's how the band Toto got started. It's mostly made up of session players that just decided to start a band.
Yeah, I think I'd heard that before too. I think it's happened a few times in rock and roll history or music history anyway.
But I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. Like we said before, Birdland became an unexpected hit. Birdland, the album's opening track, became one of the most recognizable jazz fusion compositions ever. It was rare for an instrumental jazz tune to find crossover success, but Birdland got radio airplay, was covered by Manhattan Transfer and Quincy Jones, and even earned Zawinul a Grammy. It brought jazz fusion into the mainstream like few other tracks ever did.
Yeah. Manhattan Transfer, of course, are a vocal group, so they actually wrote lyrics to it.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And I do believe that's probably the first version of the song that I was actually familiar with, was their version. But yeah, it's Weather Report is it's sort of the definitive, though instrumental, version.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But I'm curious to hear the vocal version. And yeah, Jaco Pastorius cemented his legend. Although Jaco had played on Weather Report's previous album, Black Market, Heavy Weather was his true breakout. His compositions, Teen Town and Havana, showcased the revolutionary fretless bass playing, full of harmonics, melodic runs, and expressive phrasing that redefined what a bassist could do.
And he died young, apparently. I think in the early 80s, and he was really young when this came out. I can't remember how old he was, but I think he was in his 20s.
Yeah, he would have been, well, he was born in 1951, so he would have been, 26 when this came out, and he died in 87, and he was 35 when he died. On September 11th, 1987, Pastorius snuck into the stage at a Santana concert at the Sunrise Musical Theater in Sunrise, Florida. Weather Report was an associated act of Santana in the mid-70s. After being ejected from the premises, he made his way to the Midnight Club in Walton Manors. After reportedly kicking in a glass door, having been refused entrance to the club, he became involved in a violent confrontation with Luke Haven, a club employee who was a martial arts expert. Pastorius was hospitalized for multiple face fractures and injuries to his right eye and left arm and fell into a coma. Oh, so he died from brain trauma from getting into a fight, basically. That's too bad.
It is too bad.
That is what we call a not-so-fun fact. But here's a fun fact about the album. It says it was a true collaborative effort. While Joe Zawinul and Wayne Shorter had been the primary creative forces of the band, Heavy Weather marked a shift toward a more collaborative sound. Jaco Pastorius not only played bass, but also co-produced the album and contributed major compositional input, making it a rare fusion of three musical minds at the peak of their powers. Pretty cool that it's like a true group effort. And yeah, it is their best-selling album. Heavy Weather is not just a critical darling. It's Weather Report's best-selling album. It went gold, over 500,000 copies sold in the U.S., which is especially impressive for an instrumental jazz fusion record in the 70s. Its commercial success helped legitimize the fusion genre in the eyes of both critics and audiences. And the album title reflects the music. Joe Zawinul often said that the title Heavy Weather reflected the dense, dynamic, and emotionally intense nature of the music. The songs move through moods like a fast-changing sky, sunny and upbeat one moment, Birdland, and ominous and stormy the next, Havana. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I sort of different words to describe the same sort of thing that we were talking about.
It's about creating a mood more than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So those were some interesting facts about the album, but let's get into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friend Jess over at Music Notes with Jess. So check that out.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ann Katina. I've always loved music and surround myself with it every day. I've sung in choirs, took digital musical classes in college, and used to work in radio. To further share my knowledge and experience with others, I created this podcast, Music Notes with Jess, in 2019. I'm so fortunate of the listener growth and hearing back from some of the celebs I discussed in past episodes. That's why now I'm ready to expand. So let's have fun taking weekly music notes of throwbacks, modern hits, and media. Thank you. Talk to you soon on Music Notes with Jess.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with Havana.
Havona.
Havona, yes. So one of the things that I noticed about that last track is, and I think this may be where the fusion part comes in, is the way that Jaco was playing the bass. It was almost like he was mimicking, and he was playing very similar to what like John Coltrane would do with a saxophone. And so that sort of clicked in my mind and on that last track. It's like, oh, okay. All right. Okay. I see what you're doing there. Okay. That's cool. That's really cool. And it's cool that he's, and it's almost like the bass is coming, like the low end is coming from the other sort of atmospheric, like the synthesizer and some of the other instruments. And his bass is more, he's playing a lot higher. So it's not really a bass. It's more of a melodic. It is technically a bass guitar, but he's not using it to lay the low end down, really.
No, it's funny how jazz doesn't seem to need a bass to carry. Like, the drum does a lot more work in a lot of jazz, whereas the bass almost acts like another melodic instrument in a lot of things. And I've noticed that in a lot of jazz, actually.
Yeah, and it's coming from, like, me, like, who, like, coming from a rock background, that's totally the opposite of how you think. Like, the drums, yes. But the bass, the drums and the bass together are the foundation. The bass, drums, and then the rhythm guitar. That's the foundation. And then you build everything on top of that. But with jazz, it's almost like, well, this sounds like a joke, but I don't mean it as a joke. It's almost like there is no foundation. It's like there is structure and there is a foundation, but it's not in the bottom. It's not in the low end. It's like the drums are laying down a rhythm, but then they'll start doing something. It's almost like they're trading off they're trading off which instrument is going to be the rhythm, and everybody sort of gets a solo, and there is no real structure. There's no hierarchy in terms of how the song is built.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to put it. The lack of a hierarchy. And I remembered what the other jazz fusion album we were listening to was, Hot Rats by Frank Zappa.
That's right. That's right.
And it came to me because I think we was listening to parts of, like, especially Palladium and even in parts of Havona, really started reminding me of, like, some of the stuff that he was doing on that album. Trying to remember the specific tracks. but I can't at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's if I remember correctly, that was sort of the first, considered the first jazz fusion album, sort of mirroring the rock with jazz.
He sort of invented jazz fusion, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and this is 77, so this is like almost 10 years later.
It's 8 years later, but yeah.
8 years later, yeah. And so it's interesting to see how, like, if this is the best-selling jazz, if we listen to Frank Zappa's album, and that was sort of the first, and this is sort of the peak of jazz fusion, because this is like the best-selling jazz fusion album. It's interesting hearing like the two bookends of it, and sort of seeing where it started and seeing it sort of where it ended up. And you know, it's obviously easy to see that the trajectory, but how like that fretless bass, man, that really changed everything. I think that was probably the biggest innovation that I can tell.
It was definitely a pretty major shift. I'm not saying everybody went on to use it, but a lot of people did.
Yeah, it became. Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't one of those. It wasn't like, you know, after Eddie Van Halen, guitar became like the guitar Olympics. He actually hated, but anyway. Yeah. But it wasn't like that. It wasn't everywhere, but it definitely popped up a lot. And like I was saying, that's a sound that I associate with a lot of music from the 80s. So it definitely caught on, and other bass players, like, they started selling fretless bass specifically for that sound. I am curious, and I don't know, like, what possessed him to try, because that is such a, well, I'm gonna take all the frets off my bass and see what that sounds like. It's like, or was it like, did he want to mimic like a stand-up bass, or it, like, was that the idea?
It probably was the mimicking of a stand-up bass is probably where at least part of the nugget of the idea probably came from. It doesn't sound like a stand-up bass at all. It sounds, well, it's got part of that, because the stand-up bass is fretless as well, so it's kind of got a little bit of that warm, woody sort of, like, texture to it. But the tone is completely different.
I would say that him taking the frets off of his bass is the equivalent to, I can't remember the guy's name, but the guy that invented the B-string bender on the Telecaster to make it sound like a steel guitar. He played with the Flying Burrito Brothers.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, and his name is on the tip of my tongue, and I can't.
Gene Parsons and Clarence White of the Nashville West and of the Birds. Jaco doing that, like, just that outside of the box thinking. Yeah. I want this instrument. It's not practical to carry around a pedal steel guitar. How can we make a solid body guitar sound like a pedal steel guitar? Well, what does the pedal steel guitar do? The strings bend up. I think it's a semitone. Okay. So how can we make the beat? And they came up with this contraption where if you pull on it and with the strap, it bends the B string. It's that, but with the bass, him taking the frets off. It's like, well, I need my bass to sound like an upright bass or a cello or something like that. Something like that. So what can I do? Well, what happens if I take the frets off? Oh, and the thing is, the instrument doesn't sound exactly like what you want it to do, but what you want it to sound like, but it invents this unique sound.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious about minds that think like that. Like, there's this thing that exists, but I want to change it slightly. And how can I do that? It's just like, it's fascinating.
No, well, I mean, in my family, we do have minds that sort of like that, but we don't, like my grandfather, or rather my great-grandpa, who is a fiddle player, he was constantly tinkering and doing stuff like that. I have a solid body. It's just a block of wood, but it's in the shape of a violin, because he was going to make a solid body violin. This is before solid body violins were ever even like took off or anything, or electric violins or anything like that. He was doing this probably back in the 70s or 60s even. And also another violin that's hanging on my mom's wall has got 6 strings on it. So he was constantly tinkering with stuff like that. So yeah, there are minds like that all over the place. It's just, some things catch on, some things don't. And some things catch on with somebody else rather than catch on with somebody else.
yeah, exactly. But yeah, I've for this album, I actually really did enjoy the album. What would be your three highlights from the album?
I think I know what my three highlights are. I mean, I'm gonna go with Birdland just because it's classic. I've always loved that song. And then I'm going to go with Palladium and probably Havona.
Yeah, those are my picks as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are that's exactly what I was thinking. I mean, the other songs are great as well. I mean, there isn't anything bad that stood out to me. And I think those are absolutely those are the ones that really stood out. Yeah, as like sort of tent poles for the album. It's like, oh, okay, and then everything else is sort of like, you know what I'm trying to say.
I think I know what you're trying to say. They are the three most jazz fusion-y songs on the album, I think. Whereas the other ones were sort of, they were experimenting with other things and doing, you know, taking things in other directions. And it wasn't necessarily a bad thing or anything like that. I just happen to really like those three quote-unquote tent poles.
Yes. Yeah. So I think I know the answer, but would you listen to this album? Excuse me. Would you listen to this album again?
Yes, I would.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. I think I have to. I think it is one of those albums. Like I said, it's more about the feeling. And like a lot of the things that we say on this podcast is if we would listen to it again, it's like, yeah, I would listen to it if I'm in the mood to listen to it. I think with this, I would listen to it to get into a certain mood.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And I've listened to a lot of instrumental music that sort of puts me in different moods and stuff like that. And I enjoy it quite a bit. And this is just, you know, this is like an earlier version of some of the stuff I listened to. But yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Be sure to, you can follow the show if this is your first time listening, and leave us a rating and review because it really helps listeners find us. And you can check out the website, go to polyphonicpress.com. You can get all the previous episodes as well as any updates and stuff like that. And like I said before, you can check out the Patreon, go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Lots of cool stuff there. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.